All right, folks, Precision Pro. One advantage that low handicap golfers have that has nothing to do with the mechanics of their swing, it's that they approach every shot with all the right information. The more informed you are, the better your decision-making process is before you even swang that club. I rely on Precision Pro rangefinders to give me the precise information as I make my way through 18 holes, sometimes 36, MJ. I've carried several of their rangefinders around the world with me, and they've all been easy to use, incredibly fast, and most importantly, it gives me the exact yardage so I can choose the right club. You know, you need those two things. It's a relationship, folks. You can't just hit the same club on every shot, and you can't just hit the same yardage. All golfers need a rangefinder that they can trust. And I'm telling you that my boys over there in Cincinnati, I trust them. And I'm just saying that the Precision Pro is a brand I trust. My listeners also receive $20 off any of their great rangefinders. Just use the promo code ERIK at checkout for an extra $20 off, E-R-I-K, to add to one of their award-winning rangefinders to your bag this summer. You can even put it in your pocket. I do that too. It actually is, it's got a magnet too, and it goes onto your cart. But if you put it on the cart, you might forget it. I've done it, folks. Don't do it to yourself. Don't play yourself like that. Best of all, Precision Pro Golf is the only rangefinder that offers free lifetime battery replacements. So not only are you getting a rangefinder, you're signing up for a lifetime service. It's a commitment. It is a lifetime commitment. You literally hand in hand with Precision Pro. Well, I'm not sure where that came from. Anyway, it's all part of the industry-leading customer service that Precision Pro Golf delivers to every customer. Booyah! Swing with confidence, hit more greens, and with use and I'm going to do that one more again. Swing with confidence, hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. Later. What's up, friends? What's up? What's up, compadres? All right, folks. Jones Golf Bags. My friends over at Jones Bags and Grayson Clothiers have come together to bring you something really cool and very exciting. And it's not ice cubes, folks. It's over the next few weeks, they will be doing an Instagram contest where the winner will get a lot of cool references, folks. Clearly, it's cold up in the Pacific Northwest. I know Grayson is based in Detroit, otherwise known as Detroit. Charlie, great guy. These are all good people. $200 gift card is a winner going to get from each company. Wow. I'm struggling. As well as a FaceTime lesson, this is pretty chill, with none other than the former number one golfer in the world, Luke Donald, folks. Luke is a huge fan of both Jones and Grayson Clothiers and would love nothing more than to help you improve your golf game from the comfort of his own home, your own home. I guess you'll both be at home. You're not going to his house, I'll tell you that. I mean, I know maybe you could slide into Luke Donald's DMs, but I don't know if you could, actually. If you slide into Luke Donald's DMs and he responds to you, text me a screenshot. Okay, I'm sure we could all use an extra golf lesson at this time. That is very true. I was all over the place this morning. It was like scrambled eggs without a pan. All you have to do to enter is post a picture or a video of your quarantine golf, and whether that's at home or your now open golf course, hashtag quarantine golf. Do you know how to spell that? I'm going to try right now. Quarantinegolf. Quarantine golf. Hashtag quarantine golf. And be sure to tag both Jones Sports Co. Jones underscore sports underscore co and Grayson Clothiers in the post. That's at Jones underscore sports underscore. I cannot underscore co and at Grayson Clothiers, Greyson Clothiers. Be sure to use your Jones and Grayson gear if you got it. If you got it, use it if you got it. I was going to say smoke them if you got them, but obviously I didn't say that. Keep your eyes and ears peeled. Winner will be announced May 25th. Get involved. I will say one of my favorite raincoats on planet Earth is the Jones Grayson Anorak, my friends. It's hooded. It's smart. It fits. And I feel like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, but that's a little, I don't know if that's a compliment to myself. The truth is, I haven't even seen it. I'm going to watch it tonight. Anyway, get involved. All right. Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show. This is the first of its kind.
A guy who has no idea what he's doing with any audio equipment.
Professional golfer gets sent a kit of camera gear. And I think we figured that out pretty fast, Joel. I feel like we got that in about maybe 6 minutes, including, I mean, you moved furniture around.
Yeah, if I didn't have to move the mic holder, I think we'd be in a lot better shape. But nonetheless, I got it done.
Joel Dahmen, PGA Tour player, you're a character. Why do people... why are you a character? You're not the normal PGA Tour golfer, and I think that's why you... I don't know. What is that?
Character's kind of funny. I think I am an everyday man who grew up very blue-collar, small town, Eastern Washington. You know, parents worked hard. I think I'm just kind of the everyday golfer. I enjoy listening to music. I like drinking beer when I'm on the golf course. I like, you know, playing with random people. I like meeting people through golf. I like whatever it is. I play golf professionally. I'm very lucky to do it at a very high level and have a career out of it. But when I'm home, I just kind of go play with the buddies and hang out. And I think that makes me kind of an everyday guy, an everyday golfer. I think I'm more relatable to people than others.
You and I have been trying to do an interview for about a year now.
We've been working on
it. Yeah, it was before Wells Fargo. I remember that because I remember when you were coming down the stretch at Wells Fargo, it was like you were my brother. I was so excited. And what's funny is in that time, a lot of things have happened. Most notably for me, Golf Digest did a really fascinating article with you, and Max did a really great interview with you. And I remember seeing that come out because do you remember the title of the article?
Best interview in golf, I believe.
Best interview in golf.
Which I was a little taken, I was taken aback by it, but it's refreshing, I guess.
It was for me, it had like a dual part to read the article because it's like, I had considered us sort of friends through technology, and I was really looking forward to talking to you in person because that's one of the things that, you know, with the podcast, we really try to do so you can feel sure. closer, you have better quality for the podcast. And, you know, now we just said, okay, fine, we're going to do this. We're not going to wait any longer. But, you know, I was excited, but also it's like, oh man, like this is a really good interview. And I'm encouraging anybody, if you like to read, which unfortunately I don't, go read the article.
Yeah, Max did a great job. He came out last September, I guess kind of in our long off season, I think it was, is when he came out here, you know, he came out for 2 days. We had him over for dinner one night. My wife cooked him a nice meal, and then we met up the next day for a couple beers, and we played a little bit of golf, so... it was great. I think Max did a great job on the article as well. It's not like I'm on in the middle of Golf Digest all the time, but I've done many interviews, you know, through my career, and some don't always come out maybe exactly how you want them to. And I think you did a good job of conveying who I was and, you know, a little more insight to the fans out there.
So I don't, you know, a lot of people will listen to this at different times. Right now it is April. Do you know the date? I don't think anyone knows the date right now.
I'm going to go, it's got to be around the 20th, right? 21st maybe?
That sounds right. I think it could even be later. I don't know, but it's late April 2020, and that will forever be remembered as the time that the world kind of stood still. You're in Arizona.
Yeah, I'm in my home in Scottsdale.
I mean, how are you doing? I mean, we're not, California is, we're not playing golf. You guys are playing golf and we're all over here jealous. So.
Yeah. I think there's been some people, escaping their state lines and coming to Arizona because golf is busy here. I don't care. Public golf course, some private clubs, a lot of the private clubs shut down to members only. But it's busy here, and I think it's kind of kept everybody sane. We put rules in place. There's no bunker rakes. There's no ball washers. One person to a cart. They prefer you walk. Pins are left in. That whole thing. So I think done a pretty good job of it. I mean, our cases of COVID-19 here are actually rather low. I think our death rate's rather low as well. So for golf courses staying open, I think everybody's done a good job of it, knowing that if we don't follow the social distancing and we kind of screw it up, then our golf course is closed. So everyone's done a good job of that, but it's really kept us sane. I mean, the best time, as most people know, to play Arizona is in March and April. You wake up, it's 60, 65, and in the heat of the day, it's 80, 85, and you just can't beat it.
What is the strangest part for you being a professional athlete, right? I mean, it's like this is supposed to be a pretty busy time of year. When are you really hit with, wow, this is super strange?
Honestly, it might have been yesterday for me, like a month into this thing. I love being home. We bought a house about 2 years ago, remodeled it, and have been hanging out and, you know, staying home. It's been great. We have a nice backyard. I got a six-year-old black lab who, Murphy, who's my best friend. We play fetch all day. Just have a coffee out on the patio in the morning and, you know, sit around during the day. And I like being home. I said it yesterday. I go, I'm a top 100 golfer in the world, but I'm probably top 50 in the world at sitting on my butt on the couch. So my wife's an incredible chef. Like, she's so, you know, making a ton of meals, healthy stuff. We're still working out a couple days a week. So we're trying to be normal as possible. But for us, I don't have a problem staying home. I'm really good at it. I can be pretty lazy. So, but I think it just kind of hit me. Like, the schedule came out, I guess, last week for the tour. I've proposed to play June 11th, I think, is that Monday of Colonial. So, but for me, that's still 50 days away. So, like, there's still so much time before that, you know, to really start ramping up for that stuff. So, but I think today was like, oh, let's go to Costco. Well, do I need anything in Costco or just going to wander around Costco? That's a whole different thing. So we're not just going wandering around. You can go get essential items, but you're not hanging out anymore per se. And got some buddies I'd like to go see. And, you know, we had some trip plans like everybody else probably, and just can't kind of do those things. And getting just a hair stir crazy, I guess.
Yeah, it's starting to get to that point where I feel like I'm seeing in my neighborhood sort of yards in the evening with more than what could possibly be the inhabitants of that house hanging out, you know?
Right, right. Like, yeah, definitely seeing that as well.
Yeah, we're just starting to, it's just like, and it's almost like denial in some ways. It's like, well, that's fine. I mean, and maybe it is. I mean, I think I actually played golf yesterday for the first time in 5 weeks in California. And I mean, yeah, it was fine. Like, I mean, I put my mask on when I was around other people. There was only one person inside. The transaction to get food was a little scary. Like, when I handed her my credit card and then took it back, I was like, I need to throw you away now. I need to burn you.
Right, right, right. Yeah, there's certainly a lot of precautions taken. And I don't know if our world will ever be the same after this. I think, you know, there'll be precautions taken all over the place. Whether, you know, I think there'll be some form of social distancing for a long time. And restaurants may never stuff you 100 people into a tiny room, you know, like it may be more spaced out there. I mean, there's so many things that, you know, will shape our future going on here. But you try to look at the positive things. You look at thinking how many people get to spend time with their family now. Like, for the most part, I mean, golfers are on the road 25, 30 weeks out of the year. One of my good friends here in town, Brandon Harkins, has a 5-month-old baby. He's spending every waking moment with the baby. So he's probably not as happy as others, but like you get to have all this time with family and enjoy it. And you know, I've played more games with my wife and puzzles and experiment with new cocktails or new recipes, whatever it may be. So I think there is a lot of good that will come out of this. Hopefully we've flattened the curve and we're on our way out of this whole thing. Sounds like we've done a good job of it so far. We need to continue on with that. And hopefully, like you said, we can get back to our normal day-to-day, whatever that is, after this whole thing.
You talked a little bit about, and I've heard a lot of professionals talk about, the experience of, you know, being new on tour. You know, your career took... Is your career normal, actually, as you get to the PGA Tour? I'm realizing I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's a good... I get there is no normal for pro golf, right? Some guys, you're Matt Wolf or you're Mark Howe and you win, you know, the summer you get on tour. Like, that's, you know, Ricky Fowler kind of did that a little bit, I think. But for most of us, it's more of a journey to get there. Whether it's 2, 3, 4 years, for me, it was 6 years, I believe, to get on tour. So kids are better nowadays than they were. You know, college kids and the junior game is all prepping you for the tour. So I don't know what... There is no normal per se, because golf is so hard and there's so many variables to it. But yeah, I think I had a pretty, what I'd like to got there sooner, sure. But it took me, I played 5 years on PGA Tour Canada, mini tours mixed in with that as well, state opens. I've played them all, and then joined the web tour at the time, now the Korn Ferry Tour in 15, played 16, got my card this summer at 16 on the Korn Ferry Tour. And this is middle of my
40s. Sorry to interrupt, but this is an interesting point for anyone who's trying to become a professional golfer. You got your tour card by $950. Yeah, it's the, you were on the money list and you basically were inside the top 25, or is it 35?
25.
So 25, number 26 was $950 behind you. I don't even know how that happens. And then that changes your life.
Completely changed my life, absolutely, in every way, shape, and form. A quick note is the guy behind me was, he's okay at golf, and his name is Xander Schauffele. Over the course, I think, you know, we played 22 to 25 events, and over the course of all that, it came down to, if he would have birdied the 18th hole at our last golf tournament, I would have been bumped out. He would have got in. And I had to dodge another bullet as well that was, he was a younger player from Tampa area. But he was par 5 on 18. He hit in the middle of the fairway and just missed a 10-foot birdie putt. And otherwise, he would have got a tour card, and I would have not. And who knows how that road goes.
But do you know all of this on the course, or you're not really?
Well, I missed a cut that week. So I was on TV watching. I was on my couch watching. And, yeah, I went through every game. Well, I cried after I missed a cut Friday, thinking there was no chance I was going to make it. You know, there's not many opportunities you get like that to get to fulfill your dream of being on tour. And it's so hard, and it's such a long road to get there. So I missed the cut Friday of Portland. I actually had missed the three previous cuts to that as well. So you could say I was choking kind of late in the year. I was 15th or 16th on the money list and didn't make a cut the last month.
Yeah, you made 12 out of 20 cuts throughout the regular season, which is impressive.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, I think I had nine top 25 or something like that. So there was some good golf being played. But, yeah, the last three events, I missed the last three cuts, and that put me in a very tough spot. And somehow I came out on top. But I was that weekend, I was probably drank too many beers Friday, Saturday, and just sat on the couch on Sunday and really thought there was less than 10% chance of this holding on. And it just kind of, for whatever reason, I mean, you can call it destiny, you can call it fate, you can call it, you know, somebody's watching over me, but it all fell my way somehow, some way, and I finished 25th on that list.
So then you basically, we talked a little bit about, and I was going to try to talk to you about, this is, we got a little sidetracked, but your rookie year on tour, you have described it as, and I can relate personally, the experience of traveling. I'm obviously not a very good golfer, really, but the experience of traveling around incessantly can actually get pretty lonely. And you described your first year like that, where it's sort of like, you know, there's a community that you're entering into, and you even talked about, you know, people investing time into a newcomer. Can you tell me a little? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it can be very difficult. I was lucky that my wife was traveling with me, or she was a girlfriend at the time, now wife, was traveling with me pretty much full time. My caddy, Gino, is my best friend, who's an incredible guy. So we're both navigating this new world, basically. And I compared it to like a high school or like a middle school lunchroom. Like, you go in there, grab your lunch, and you go in and you're like, okay, where am I going to sit? You got like the popular guys, and you got the jocks, and then you got the, you know, guys, your chess club, you got, you know, all these different things. Like, well, where do I fit in? And I didn't really have, I mean, you know, you knew some rookies and stuff, you knew some guys, but if they're not in the room at that time, where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Where are you going to sit? We didn't know where we were traveling to. We, you know, like, it's new hotels, new cities. Where do you eat? Where do you stay? How do you get the cheapest flight? Like, the whole thing is just, it's overwhelming. It really is. Because then, you know, the lights come on Thursday and you're wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and you're trying your hardest to play golf, and then you're trying too hard because you're not playing very well, and then it just kind of bleeds over into this whole mess. So it's just very difficult to adjust for a guy who, you know, I was never the star. I was never an All-American in college. I was a good player, junior player, but, you know, in the Northwest, pretty local guy. So I never had these worldly experiences where I always was the best player, hung out with the best guys. So just became lonely, especially when you miss cuts. I got two starts in the fall, missed both cuts. It took me till Pebble Beach. That's February on the calendar to make a cut. And that's a long time. That's hard. Because you're spending a lot of money and you're nothing's coming in. So it gets tough in every way. And it took me, rookie year did not play well. But luckily kind of figured it out at the end of the summer. Got my card back. So I lost my tour card, got it back at the Web Finals or Corn Ferry Finals. Once again, sweated it out on that the final Sunday. Ended up 24th on that list, a little better than 25th. so that was good. Then, you know, I got some more starts. I felt more comfortable the second year round. Got to meet more people, knew these tournaments I was going to, or some of them anyways. And, you know, from there, it kind of built on itself. It took me 30 events, probably, I'd say 25 or 30 events as a on the PGA Tour before I felt comfortable of my who I was as a tour player, my golf game, you know, and week, you know, everything that goes into a week.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine even the like simple logistics of it all are sort of, there's a learning curve even.
There's a ton, and there's, you know, if you're a great player, whatever, you're going to have some more people around you helping you. Now, I had an agent and stuff, but like I'd always booked my own travel. I'd always done everything on my own. And so like, I wasn't going to change that per se. You know, I don't want somebody booking me a 7 a.m. flight when I'd rather sleep in a little bit and catch the Southwest flight later that day type of thing. So, you know, I just stayed cheapest hotel, whatever it was. I was a Priceline guy. So, just all these little logistics that goes into, and it starts to wear on you. It starts to build up, and it's, you know, and then when your golf isn't going as well either, it's even more difficult. So, good golf takes care of everything, as they say. I mean, as soon as you have a couple good events, you start thinking that you can be out here, you know, for a solid career. You can start competing with some of the better guys, and you get some confidence, and all of a sudden, instead of staying in a $75 night room, you can get the Marriott for $125, and then you can, you know, move up to United flights instead of Southwest. And then it just kind of keeps building and building. And, you know, fortunately we're four years in, and, we're pretty comfortable in who we are and what we're doing. And I think we have a good game plan to be out here for a long time.
What is the highlight so far, on the course for you?
Probably playing with Tiger Woods is probably the coolest thing I've done. Playing with Tiger Woods is the coolest thing I've done.
Let's talk about that for a second. So, I'll only say again, I'm not known for my skill on the golf course. I met Tiger, and
I saw the clip of you talking about the watch or something. Was that what that was?
Yeah,
that was you'd planned your conversation with him forever.
Yeah,
and it just.
Exactly. And I guess what I'm really getting at is like with that clip, it's like even looking back on it, like this was in November and really realizing that for some reason, this person made me more nervous than anyone else on planet Earth. And I can't tell you every Tiger Woods stat. Like I'm not a crazy Tiger Woods fanboy. I mean, I love golf. I love pro golf. I know a lot about it, but it was strange, the experience, and I don't really yet understand it. Can you tell us about your experience?
I played with him the summer of 18, June-ish of 18 at his Rocket Mortgage, I believe. He was hosting the event in D.C. area. I think it was like TPC Avalon, maybe. Francisco Molinari ended up winning that one, but... yeah, it was like, there's just a different aura. And I had only been around at that time. It was my second year on tour. 16, 17, yeah. So it was just I was only 25 events into my career probably. And I'd only been around him at a couple of events. Like I wasn't getting into those bigger events where he played all the time. And he was just kind of beginning his comeback as well at that same time. So It was, I remember watching the leaderboard. I finished Friday afternoon. Maybe I finished in the morning, but anyway, I had all afternoon to watch this leaderboard, and he was kind of around me as he was finishing. And I think he finished, and I needed two guys to, like, make a par. One guy needed to make a birdie, another guy needed to make a bogey or something to make it all shuffle to where I would tee off with him in twosomes. And I got that, you know, I watched when I think Sam Ryder made a bogey on 18, and it paired me with Tiger on Saturday. And I just, it was a moment I freaked out for a long time. But I was at dinner with my wife, and just, like, actually the text actually came through, said, hey, you got a tee time, it's just you and Tiger. And I was just dropped and kind of went ghost white. My wife's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm playing with Tiger. She's like, oh my goodness. So that was Friday night. And then I woke up Saturday morning to about a million texts and a ton of stuff on Twitter. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on Twitter? Well, Tiger Tracker had dug up a tweet of mine that I said that Tiger is crazy to watch right now. He can't find a fairway. He can hit his driver anywhere. Well, he retweeted that, and he said, well, look like, you know, this young buck, Joel, or whatever, he's going to have his handful of Tiger today. Because we were both playing well. We were around, like, we were around 10th. So for me, it was also, I had to play well to keep my card at the time. I was around the bubble boy. I was around that 125 mark with only 6 or 7 events to play. And I needed to play well, and all of a sudden, one of the biggest rounds of my life, I'm playing with, you know, this godlike figure in the golf world of Tiger Woods. So it was wild, but that hole kind of set everything in motion, and I actually saw him in the lunchroom before we teed off, and that made me feel a lot more comfortable that we didn't say anything. It's just, okay, like, he's human too, like, he's using a fork, and, you know, it's all gonna be okay. But yeah, I'll never, just walk into that, I made sure I got to the tee first, because, I don't know, I didn't want to walk into his world. He was going to walk into my world, I guess. That makes no sense, but I wanted him to walk to me. But, yeah, he was in a trance. Like, I think he was in the Tiger zone, and I was like, hey, I'm Joel, and you could see him, like, almost snap out of it. Like, his eyes, like, flipped on him. He's like, oh, hey, I'm Tiger. Nice to meet you, you know. Let's have a great day today. And I was like, whoa, like, holy cow.
And he said, let's have a great day today.
Yeah, it was awesome. It couldn't have been more normal. Couldn't have been a better guy to play with. Just so much fun. I mean, he birdied. We both played pretty well. I shot 2 under. I shot 3 under. He shot 4, maybe. I shot 69 to his 68. So I played fine. Couldn't have been more nervous early on in the round, but really settled in and kind of got cut up watching the times. I think he birdied 4, 5, 6, and 7. He birdied 4 in a row to get to, like, 1 back of the lead. On Saturday, that was fun.
I remember this, yeah.
And I was just kind of chasing him around a little bit, but it was just an experience I'll never forget. And he couldn't have been better to play with. He was great. He was nice. We chatted quite a bit, and could see why he was the greatest player of all time at one time.
Any golf takeaway for you? And did you learn anything? And was there anything where you were just like, I can't wait to tell this to someone? What did Gino think?
Gino was losing his marbles. Well, we had joked all morning of, what are you going to say to him? Are you going to hug him? Are you just going to shake his hand? Like, are you going to have a funny joke for him? Like, what is the plan here? You know, obviously, it was just all the things that you would say to Tiger, what you ever think about, and you just try to keep it as normal as possible. But, yeah, I mean, it was just a blast. At one time, after he made his 4th birdie in a row, it was so loud around us. It was kind of amphitheater green. It was so loud. And Gino just yelled. He goes, this is effing awesome. And no one could hear him because we're in the middle of this. It was just, that was an experience I'll never forget. On that 7th green, the 4th birdie in a row. And Gino was screaming and no one could hear him. Like, just how cool it was. That moment. Yeah, it was just, I was down to a 2 to play, and Gino was like, we got it. We got to birdie these last 2 so we can probably play with him again tomorrow. I'm like, okay. So I birdie 17. It's a hard par 3, and I make a 30-footer. I birdie it, and we're walking 18. He's like, okay, you got to make another birdie. You got to make another birdie. I'm like, okay. I just missed birdie. He bogeys 18. So I must have been 3 down with 2 to play, but I lose by 1. There's still, like, a chance I could play with him. But I think somebody else got him on Sunday, or obviously somebody else got him on Sunday. But it was just a experienced, you know, you'll never forget. It was the first time playing in front of crowds, really, like big time crowds. First time playing in anything that nervous for that extended period of time. Like, you're just always nervous. And there's a lot of people, you like don't want to embarrass yourself in front of Tiger. You want to like prove that you can play golf. And I think I did that okay. And actually after that, the next week I finished fifth at Greenbrier, my best finish, locked up my tour card. The week after that, I finished second at John Deere, best finish on tour, had two other top tens to end the year, and ended up like 70th on the FedEx Cup. So that whole Saturday with Tiger, I think, you know, shooting a couple under with him spurred like the rest of that summer and really kind of sparked my career. If you look at the results directly from that Saturday on forward.
What do you attribute that to? I mean, because he didn't give you a swing tip.
If you can play solid golf in that environment with that many people around in front of that guy on a pretty hard golf course, you can do it anywhere, anytime. So when I was coming down the stretch on the weekend at Greenbrier, I was not nearly close as nervous as I was the previous Saturday. So, like, if you can do it in that environment, you can do it anytime. It's easier to play, I think, Sunday around the lead than it is to play with Tiger Woods.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's just for a guy like me. I mean, you got JT and he's buddies with a lot of those Jupiter guys and those top guys now. But, I mean, for anybody who's not in that circle of Tiger, it is way harder and more nerve-wracking to play with him than try to win a golf tournament, for sure.
On tour, you're essentially a silhouette on TV, right? It's hard to really, in the fairway, Joel has a bucket hat and I'm into bucket hats. So we're immediately friends.
All right.
How come people don't wear bucket hats more often on the PGA Tour?
The tour is very cookie cutter, very robotic. It's an old school game with a lot of traditions, and no one likes to break those traditions or be, the kind of guy that stands out in any way other than maybe with their golf clubs. You've seen it forever with almost everybody, but this is kind of a new wave. You know, we have up and coming generation guys. We grew up with social media. I can say that we were rebellious in any way per se, but that we're okay with doing things a little bit different, I guess. Golf is still kind of stuck in the old school. It's still wealthy. It's white. It's country club. It's elitist. And I hate that. I grew up in a small town at a country club, but it cost $125 a month for a family of four. That included unlimited golf, a locker room, pool, and our dining fees. So, like, pretty blue-collar country club. It was incredible. Incredible place to grow up. People pay three times that much for just one round of golf, and I'd play 50 rounds of golf in a month for that. But that's growing up in a small town, very blue-collar. So I just think the traditions of the game, like, I think a lot of them are great, but it's okay to maybe ruffle the feathers every now and then and have a little more fun and play music and, you know, have fun with your buddies out. So for me, maybe the bucket hat is what became my kind of signature this last 2 years, but something I always just kind of did. I wore around here in Scottsdale because I didn't want to get beat up by the sun. You look at some of the old guys who've been out in the sun forever. They just don't look very good. So with that, I was kind of more strictly for skincare, knowing I was going to be doing this for 40 or 50 years. And then it kind of turned into its own thing, and you start playing decent golf, and people recognize a different guy out there with a bucket hat, and like, oh, hey, what's going on here? And then it's kind of taken off on a life of its own now.
All right, folks, Adidas. Adidas is pushing the boundaries once again in golf footwear. And if you've been counting, I haven't been counting. It's a lot of times. But they're doing it again, so whatever many times it's been, it's at one. So you need to check this out. It's called the Code Chaos, all capitals. The footwear team let me know that this shoe is meant to break down traditional stereotypes and make a statement that there doesn't have to be one look for the sport when it comes to golf footwear. It's athletic and bold from a style standpoint, but this shoe is seriously packed with technology. It's spikeless, but beyond just being tested with guys like DJ and Xander, they did heat map studies. Heat map. That means they know where you are right now. They literally know. And watch, I'm telling you, you're going to get an ad for Adidas footwear in your feed. I'm telling you. And I just, it's not me. I don't know if it's them. It's probably Xander, not DJ. Xander's got an X in his name, so he's a little more sinister. Even though I would not, I would probably feel more likely that DJ would really, he could do some damage with the club. To my face. So to see how players shift their weight, they use this heat mapping technology to see where they shift their weight, but also where you are physically at this current moment throughout the swing. So anyway, with all that info, they created a new traction system called Twist Grip. Twist Grip. That's spelled the way it sounds. Anyway, so the players get the grip they need exactly where they need it, and this is an ad lib, and when they need it. That's, I just added that. It's waterproof. Waterproof is key. Let's get honest, folks. If you want a waterproof shoe, unless you live in the desert, you can wear sandals or moccasins. But for everybody else, you need the waterproof shoe. So hit up the code CHAOS. It's waterproof, lightweight, and obviously has the boost cushioning, which we all love. There's even a high top BOA version, which I'm not sure I'm man enough to rock, but John Rahm is. But he's also... he's very, very good at golf. We can all agree. These things are next level. So get yourself a pair. Head over to adidas.com/codechaos. Spelled the way it sounds. Although the CH in chaos sounds more like a K. So it's CODECHAOS. And shop the styles and follow Adidas Golf on Instagram and Twitter for all the latest news from Les Trois Stripes. That's three stripes, folks. All right. I'm going to catch me now. We got... Give me a second, all right? I'm about to do an ad read for Vice Golf. I don't even have a read, so this is an ad lib. This is an ad libbed read. Anyway, Vice Golf, you all know I love the brand. They make a great golf ball, and there are things that I would tell you in person about the golf ball that I can't tell you in a public forum. But basically, the golf ball is amazing. Technically speaking, on test, it performs as good or better than what we call, quote, the best golf ball on tour. Now, the Vice Golf ball also has one cool thing, which is that it's cool. Obviously, the scripting is really sweet. But beyond that, it has another cool thing. I'm going to keep pulling cool things out of this ball. The second cool thing is that you can't get it in a pro shop. So go online, go to vicegolf.com and get your slick balls. They've got all different types. They've got the tour, they've got the drive, they've got the pro, they've got the pro plus. They've got different colors, and you can also personalize less than, you can personalize, I don't know what number you can personalize, but you can personalize them. Whereas other brands don't let you personalize them except for once a year. So check out vicegolf.com. Get yourself some smooth and cool balls for the course, that is. Anyway, y'all, see you in the showers until the next ad read. All right, Whoop, folks. Whoop, W-H-O-O-P. I think you know what I'm talking about. You've seen Rory wearing it. You may have seen me wearing it. And I'm pretty much into this wearable device, wearable technology, wearable. I like it. At first, I was like not sure if I was going to like having this thing on my wrist, but I'm into it mostly because of the incredible amount of information that it gives me about me and my life and how to perform better. Like, I'm not going to ever be some amazing athlete, but I do like getting this feedback from my body. So basically, it has inside of it this crazy light that reads not only your heart rate, but all sorts of other things about your body, mostly the time in between heartbeats, the heart rate variability, that's key. Anyway, it provides personalized insights on the performance of your sleep and how recovered your body is and how much stress you put on your body throughout the day from your workouts and the normal stressors of life. Big key takeaway, walking 18 holes, that's a workout, folks. No joke. So anyway, when I get up, I look at my Whoop score. I try to see how I slept last night. And I've tried to incorporate takeaways to get better sleep. And, especially when traveling and stuff like that, cause rest is really important. And, the quality of sleep is really key. So, you know, it has all these, you know, suggestions for getting better sleep. The biggest takeaway is consume a lot of water. Also, I've started exercising more. This thing plugs in great to all of my exercise routines, and I can see exactly where I'm at my max heart rate. It's got a built-in feature with a strain coach that it gives you target exertion goals and work out optimally for the level of intensity. It basically is a personal assistant for your working out. And folks, big deal for you guys. They're offering 15% if you use the code EAL at checkout. That's 15% off WHOOP.com and enter EAL at checkout to get your discount. Sleep better, recover faster, and train smarter. optimize your performance with Whoop. It's custom tailors to your body. It takes like a little bit of time to get to know you, and then it knows you. And it's fun because I've got a lot of friends that use it, and we talk about it. I'm like, yo, what was your sleep score last night, bro? And basically it's how early did you go to bed and how early did you wake up and did you get distracted while sleeping? It tracks all four stages of your sleep, slow, wave, REM, light, and when you wake up. And it can tell you how much sleep you've actually gotten down to the minute. So it's like the first thing I do when I wake up is I just check it and I'm like, yo, how did we do last night? And I can tell, I can notice the difference now. And it's kind of like that awareness wasn't really there before using the Whoop strap. The Whoop journal allows you to track the decisions that you make during the day and the impact that those have on your recovery. And basically, guys, Whoop can help anyone perform better, whether it's preparing for a golf match, yo, yeah, race, meeting, etc. Whoop can help plan out your day and make smarter lifestyle decisions to help you feel better than ever. And I can say I have definitely improved in a lot of areas there, whether even now when I walk 18, like I feel better, you know what I mean? And I think part of that is you're just focusing on your body's performance. And this is the tool that gives you the insight to do that. So please go check it out. Support the people that support us. Whoop.com, WHOOP, enter code EAL at checkout to get 15% off.
TaylorMade, folks. I got to tell you, the first golf clubs that ever went in my little old hands were TaylorMade Burner Oversize. They had some crusty old grips that I redid myself at risk of my own fingertips with the razor, and I got high because I don't know if you've ever re-gripped your clubs, but you become an inhalant addict because you're putting like really noxious stuff. Don't grip your own clubs unless you really want to. Anyway, mad respect. Give me a fist bump whenever I see you. I grip my own clubs. I put the grips on them myself. I saved. How much did you save? I mean, you could save money. You save money because I think you put them on, it's like $20 each. And you buy the grips yourself, it's like $8. By the way, re-gripping 14 clubs, I mean, that's like a lot. Go buy TaylorMade's instead. They come with grips. My favorite TaylorMade edition now, obviously the Sim Max I'm playing, is a monster club. One of the many things Tiger Woods have and I in common is playing the Sim. But also, I kind of love the wedges. The raw-faced wedges, MG. I both love the high toe in matte black. I also have a matte black shaft. I know you didn't ask, but I went ahead and told you. Anyway, TaylorMade, my favorite thing about TaylorMade, beyond the incredibly performing equipment, is the people that make this company up. The band of brothers down here, the band of sisters, the family in Carlsbad, really, really gets behind what we do. And that means it's important for you to get behind what they do. So go support TaylorMade, everybody, and hit them straight, or just don't, just hit them with TaylorMade's though. Just get some, just stop messing around with all the others. Hit them straight with TaylorMade, but just hit TaylorMade at least. I mean, if you're not, I mean, just go, I mean, what are you doing? Just pause the pod, go on TaylorMade. What's their website? They don't even need a website. Just go find TaylorMade ASAP. There should be what? What I play? I play the, okay, studio is asking me to play, I pay the P760s, four through pitch. Then I've got the milled grind raw face, 50, 54, and 58. And then I rock, I'm in between the gapper and the sim hybrid right now. I play the two gapper. I've got a steel shafted 6.5 Project X in that one, as with all the irons. And then on the driver, I have the Sim Max with a 9 degree. I'm still working on getting my numbers on that. I don't really know. I got the 10.5 and the 9. We're going to do a little experimentation. Maybe, honestly, you know what? Whatever one I don't use, how about it's yours? How about that? I don't know how we're going to manage this. Head over to the Instagram account. Get ready for the old giveaway of the driver that I can't hit. Anyway, TaylorMade's the family, folks.
How did you become, like, I guess I'm putting words in your mouth, but maybe addicted to golf or in love with golf? How would you describe it?
It's a really good question. So grew up in a small town. My dad played. My dad got me started in it. He was a good player. He got down to 5 or 6 handicaps, so he could play. He taught my mom to play when they had met. So, and she was a good athlete. She played basketball growing up, and she got to where she was a bogey golfer. So she got around just fine, but she hit it pretty far. And it's just kind of what we did. We just played golf. I played all sports. Played baseball, basketball, soccer, football. I mean, I did it all. So golf was easy for me to just. I lived 2 blocks away from the golf course. hop in the golf cart, drive down, spend all day there. Didn't have to have anybody around. Could do it on my own. And then, you know, my dad got off work. He'd come out in the afternoons and hang out with me. So I was very naturally gifted at golf. At age 4, I believe, I think I shot 49 in 9 holes. And kind of took off from there. I mean, I was, I was just kind of a natural golfer. So I always had that in me. And then, as I stopped growing, I was a pretty big kid. So I was a good basketball player. It was in my small town. I was the best basketball player, football player. But as soon as I got to high school, I didn't grow anymore and everyone else did. So I had when you're 6 foot, you know, 150 pounds, you're not going to be getting any scholarships for D1 for football or basketball. So my dad saw writing on the wall for me, and he saw that golf was going to be my future, and that was probably where I was going to end up. So kind of pushed me in that direction, and I'm lucky he did. I don't love it maybe as much as other tour players do. I love competitions. I love being competitive. I struggle with the process of getting better. I don't like to beat balls on the range the whole time. I'm not going to spend hours chipping and putting. I'll go play golf with you and have a great time and cruise around. And that's, for me, it's fun. Hanging out with your buddies and stuff. I'll play 8 days a week with my buddies rather than hitting a bucket of balls on the range, for sure.
Interesting.
But I love the competition. Like, you get me, you know, inside the ropes and, you know, trophies at the end and a lot of money. I'm all in on that.
That's so interesting. I mean, wonder why. I mean, you know, is the range, it almost seems like in some ways, if you don't look at it right, the driving range, whether it's professional or amateur, it is really like, it could be a place of a way to gain certainty, or it could be to perpetuate uncertainty almost. Like I almost play better without the driving range, without thinking about my wrists at the top, you know, and just sort of, okay, the ball's going a little right, aim a little left. Okay, good.
Right, exactly. Like, I grew up without, I mean, my dad taught me, but no real instruction. And I didn't even have, like, I had a couple guys here and there help me out, but no, like, it was always kind of feel golf. I'm still very much a feel player. I've been working with the same coach now for 4 or 5 years, and he's certainly taken me to the next level. And when I see him, when I see Rob, Rob Rochelle is his name. He played on tour in early 2000s and played a couple U.S. Opens. He was a great player. When I see him, that's when, okay, we're going to put a couple hours in, and we're going to use the track man, and we're going to dial things in. But my swing hasn't changed a ton over the years. He's helped me understand my swing, but I pretty much hit the same all the time as long as my alignment's the same. But if sometimes I feel like a fade, I'm going to hit more of a fade, and sometimes I feel like a draw, I'm going to hit more of a draw. I don't have... it's just kind of what I show up with that day, and that's kind of how I go with that. So I don't really need the range per se. I use it for purely warming up, and you can, you know, go from there.
What's your favorite shot on the golf course?
My favorite shot is like a big cutting 3-wood into a par 5. I'm just thinking about how rarely I've pulled it off lately, but. it's that one or like a strong hard hybrid. I have the same hybrid in my bag since 2011. That thing is worn down. It's been through everything, and it's just too good. I've made, you know, it's a great par 3 club for me. Go for 2 and par 5s. It's been great, but I love that like 225 to 250 number going for a par 5. That's a lot of fun.
Worst, least favorite shot.
Fairway bunker shots for me are just awful. I went through a phase where I hit the lip on everyone, no matter if there was no lip or lip, I managed to hit it. And then I got to a phase where I didn't want to do that anymore, so I chunked everyone for a long time. So that's always fun. You just, at least it's out of the bunker and it's forward, but it's not necessarily the best. So I've improved that a lot recently, but it's still just terrifying in there for me. So I avoid those at all costs.
Do you and Gino play while he's caddying for you in a professional event? Do you guys have any like games or anything like that? I feel like you're do you do anything like that?
Yeah, he's always got something up his sleeve. you know, obviously if we're playing well, we have enough on the line. We probably don't need to make a $5 bet on something, but we have $5 bets running total for history of like, it could be what time the plane takes off to what time our food is served to, you know, like I'll give him, you know, a 30-foot putt and I'll give him 5-1 on $5 or an up and down or whatever it is. So we play games back and forth all the time. And there are certainly times like he's probably unsure on the golf shot. And I'm like, all right, like give me odds on it then. Like, I bet I can draw this 5-iron around this tree and knock it on the green. So we've certainly done those things. A ton practice round is all of that. Pro-ams are fun, but there's certainly been some maybe motivational bets on during a round of golf for him for sure.
What do you do? I mean, a lot of amateurs ask the question a lot is like, what can I do to get better? What's the best tip to get better? And I heard someone say, I've heard a lot of interesting takes from tour players, whether it's aim for the middle of the green, course management stuff. I mean, I'm sure when you play in pro-ams, people hit you with questions like this.
Yeah, I think this is even true for the players at the top level of the game, but in the simplest form, if you have no penalty strokes, no three putts, and no two chips, your score is going to drop dramatically. For most, you know, if you're an 18 handicapper, or even, you know, 10 to 12, and you don't have those things, you're going to almost always break 80. If you can, you know, get to every hole in regulation. So, and you could, like, you know, people are going to hit bad shots, but it's like choosing your target to avoid a hazard. Or like, I don't like this hole, I always pull driver in the water. Well, if you're going to do that and make a double, might as well hit 7-iron, 7-iron, 7-iron and make a 5. Like, to have a thing like that. So, like, if you're truly playing for score, you can avoid those things. And then, you know, a no 3-putt thing is tough. We all 3-putt on tour, but the speed control of an amateur putter is horrific compared to a PGA Tour player.
Interesting.
Speed control on the greens is comical. Anything, I mean, even if you, you know, it's a classic one. Oh, what do you think here, Joel? Well, I think it's like a cup out right. And he like hits it 8 feet past the hole. He's like, it didn't break. I go, well, you just hit it 8 feet past the hole. If you hit it a foot past the hole, it probably would have broke.
Right.
So just consistent speed control on the greens is really bad. And if you don't two chip, I mean, there's hard shots, but just get it on the green, around the greens is important.
You know, a lot of people like have this lifelong relationship with golf, you know, and it's sort of been looked at in so many ways, and it's kind of this, you know, paradox, right? It's like there's all these sort of weird things about golf. The more you care, the worse you play. You hit down to make the ball go up. You know, you hit it right to go left. You want to have the lowest number of strokes. A good round is the one that's done the fastest, kind of thing. You know, it's a strange game.
That's really strange. Yeah.
Have you like? Does that still exist for you? Did it ever?
I don't think so. I think I've always kept the game very simple. I think I've always just kind of kept it in front of me and kept it very simple and enjoyed it for what it is. I think that the fun thing, like, you can go play your home course every single day and something different's going to happen every single day. Like, you're going to be, you know, all of a sudden you're like, I've never hit it here before. Like, this is a new challenge. I think it's important for golfers to think of everything as a new challenge instead of like, oh, I suck today. It's like, no, it's just a different challenge presented because you hit it over here in the right trees instead of the left trees. Think of things like in that aspect is, I think, more fun and just, especially for your everyday golfer, they're just out here, they're weekend hackers having a great time with their friends. Like, enjoy that. I think I've just kind of kept golf simple for what it is. It's a great way to hang out with your friends outdoors, meet new people. You get to travel all over the world and do, you know, play these incredible places as well. Like, you can't, playing basketball, like, I don't care what hoop you're at or what, you know, there's some special gyms probably, but we're not going to go into Staples Arena, or we don't get to go into, you know, these places and shoot hoops. Like, you can go play these really cool golf courses all over the world and have these experiences. And I think that's a cool thing about golf, is just keeping it simple and appreciating it for what it is instead of maybe getting too crazy with it.
So Why do you play golf?
Why do I play golf? Well, there's two very different answers for me, I think. I play golf on tour because it provides me an incredible opportunity of financial freedom that I could have doing nothing else. The competition out there is second to none. Like, I couldn't, no matter how much I play with, you know, there's just no way that competition's there. Like, that really gets the juices flowing. I play golf at home to hang out with friends, to meet new people, to enjoy the camaraderie, to drink a six pack of beer over the course of 18 holes, to go out for an emergency nine. Like, I prefer that type of golf, especially after a long season of 25 events or three or four events in a row. I just want to get back home and play with my buddies. And, you know, some guys are smoking stogies, some guys are blasting music. I just like the camaraderie of hanging out on a golf course and having a small $5-$10 bet. You know, $5 Nassau is nothing better than that.
That's awesome, man. I mean, that's something that, you know, I think we can all relate to. You know, I think that, you know, we, the second part, that is, not the first part.
Sure.
But it is interesting how, you know, especially in this time now that we see with the absence of, you know, golf on television, you know, golf for the fans as an entertainment story. It's strange, you know, it's a strange experience. And I don't know if in our lifetime we'll ever have anything like this again.
I doubt it. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is, you know, we always said, you know, 9/11 kind of changed our lives in a way, everybody's lives. This is going to change our lives, and we're going to always look back on this as this thing that changed, hopefully for the good, and it'll be a new normal out there, whatever that is. But yeah, I think this is absolutely wildly unprecedented, and hopefully something good comes out of it, and hopefully it ends quickly.
Have you or your friends or anyone tried to visualize the experience of playing pro golf without fans?
We laughed about it. Brooks Koepka made a comment just a day or two ago. He's like, without fans, we're going to lose our golf ball. I go, Brooks, welcome to my world, buddy. I stand on that first tee and I see my wife. I see somebody else's wife and maybe a grandma out there watching. We don't have fans running around with every group. So I kind of laugh, you know, without, I think he mostly met probably spotters. But it is nice when you play with all those people because maybe you hit it outside the ropes and now it's a flat lie instead of, you know, crumbled up in all the rough, and you know, you get a ball that rattled, you know, it's in a tree and you don't know where it ends up, and they're like, oh, it landed over here, because you have 100 people or 200 people around instead of four. So for most of us, it won't be different Thursday, Friday. It'll change a ton on the weekend if you're playing well. That'll be an interesting one, because the fans give us life. Like, the fans, like, if you had a good shot and they go crazy, like, that's a lot of fun, especially when you're in contention. I always laugh that I hit great golf shots no matter how good or bad I'm playing into big corporate greens. You know, they're surrounded by stuff because I want the applause. I want them to root for me. I want the feeling of making a 15-footer and the crowd goes wild. Like, that's really fun. Like, I love that part of the game as well. Hopefully I get good enough where I have that Thursday, Friday as well. But, I think it'll be interesting when you have a putt to win a golf tournament for $1 million on the 18th hole. And it could feel like a Wednesday practice round. Like, it would just be like nothing's going on out there. So that will be really, really interesting, because the blood is still going to be pumping. It's still going to be going nuts. But normally there's like a little subtle buzz going on around, and it's just going to be deathly silent. That'll be interesting.
That's going to be so strange. I mean, I almost think that they should have speakers.
Totally agree. They should have like a little bit of buzz around where they'd have normally corporate tents. Like, I think in Colonial, like, 18's a cool little amphitheater. They have some nice stuff on the right side. Clubhouse behind. They do a good job on 17 green as well. That's completely surrounded. 16, 17, 18 are completely surrounded greens that are normally pretty loud and kind of a fun spot. So if they could maybe just throw a little music on or anything, just to maybe make it feel a little more normal, that'd be awesome.
Do we know if the media is going to be allowed to the event? It must be.
I have heard the media will be available, obviously in some capacity.
Yeah.
But they will be on site.
It'll be like an Instagram Live and they just throw in comments as questions.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's crazy.
No, maybe we go, you'll have to come out and check one of the first couple events out and see how crazy it is.
I would, I mean, there's nothing, I would be so fascinated to see that because, I mean, you know, you don't really know what something is until you start pulling away parts of it. And then you see, like, I mean, you know, it's a real equation there. I mean, pro sports in general are nothing without a fan. I mean, there's no reason.
Totally agree. Absolutely.
So interesting.
Yeah. To strip it down to the bare bones will be very interesting. It'll be very different for a lot of those top guys and may throw them off a little bit. I mean, just not having that normal, you know, their sense of normal is different than my sense of normal on the golf course. So who knows? It'll be very interesting to see how it plays out for a while, but you know, golf is better with fans around. I guarantee you that.
A lot of players before a tournament have like a, you know, I actually don't know too much about it, but there's like the outfit arrives, it fits perfectly, it's all good to go. What's your fashion protocol like, and when will you find out what you're going to wear for the first event of the year, or the first event after that?
That is classic. There are a handful of guys that have their clothes in their locker, nicely pressed. Here's your Thursday through Sunday outfit. Here you go. Here's your hat. Here's your shoes. Here's your belt. Like, that's fine. And they get paid a ton of money to do that. And they're probably, you know, deservedly so. Great. For me, it is what is clean. What is on top? What am I going to grab first? I've wore Linksole this year. It's my first time with Linksole, and they're a great company. I enjoy their stuff. It's pretty plain though overall. Like, I mean, you have your typical gray tones, I guess. So, can't really mismatch too much. I think I either wear a gray or black pair of shoes, a gray or black belt, and then anything kind of goes with that from there. So, I was trying to do a thing when I first turned pro where I wore purple on Sunday because I went to University of Washington, a big Husky guy. And then, like, the second week or third week of trying it, the shirt I had wasn't clean, so I didn't wear it. And then that was the end of that whole thing. So there's no rhyme or reason to what I wear. I have a bucket hat and I have a shirt and pants on, and that's about it.
Tell me about your bucket hat. The bucket hat has changed over the years. What's the bucket hat now? I know that that's important to you.
Yeah, so wore it for about a year just because, keeping the sun off me and whatever. And right after playing with Tiger, it kind of blew up one of my good friend's buddies owns a company, and he's like, hey, you don't have a hat sponsor? I said, no, I've had one for a while. He's like, cool, let's do something. I'll sponsor you for the end of the year. So great. So I ordered bucket hats from Imperial. It was with Tradition Energy with Alan Kurzer. He was awesome, stepped up for the end of the year. Wore that for a while. Wore that for over a year. And then I met with MD Anderson Cancer Center. And that's kind of near and dear to me. It was kind of met him on a whim, really. It wasn't like a planned thing per se, but met up at the Players Championship. And I had cancer myself in 2011. My mom had cancer in 2005 and passed away. And then my brother had cancer in 2009. So cancer is a history in my family. We have it. Cancer hits everybody, whether it hits you personally or somebody in your family or friends. So, but MD Anderson's been a huge sponsor of the PGA Tour. They've been one of their ambassadors for 5 or 6 years. And it was a perfect fit for me because they do skin cancer screenings at 4 or 5 events a year. You know, they do a lot of stuff surrounding the PGA Tour, the Champions Tour. And it was just a perfect fit, really. I wore my bucket hat. And, you know, we slapped the Strikeout Cancer logo on there. And I've been an ambassador of theirs for a little over a year now. And it's been fun to partner with them. I've done a lot of activations with them. And I think when people see my cancer hat, it's a sign of hope. You know, if they have it, know somebody has it, you know, I'm 9 years clean now and excelling as much as I ever have. So I think it's important to have something bigger than myself or bigger than golf. And, you know, some people see that cancer sign as a sign of hope.
That's great, man. I mean, it's such a cool way to not only like honor your family and you, but also offer, like you said, support to other people. I mean, that's really great, man.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been fun. We've been selling hats for about the last year, and proceeds go to MD Anderson Cancer Center. And it's kind of been fun that my bucket brigade, as we call them now, has kind of taken off in this last year. And you see more and more bucket hats out there. It's starting to become a thing for sure.
Is it because of your personality and your individualism, do you feel like people resonate with you perhaps more than, you know, otherwise? Or, you know, what's the feeling like?
Yeah, it is. I think that, like I said, I'm just kind of an everyday guy. Like I do pretty much a normal dude who happens to get the ball in the hole faster than the other guys, a little bit quicker. That's all. So, I mean, I'm pretty normal dude. So I think I just resonate with them. I'm willing to chat with fans throughout the week. I'll chat with them mid-tournament sometimes. You know, whatever it is, I'll practice round, say hi. I'll take some extra time to talk to people. And I try to engage with fans because, you know, they're out there watching us or spending their hard-earned money to support us out there. So I think Wednesday, our Pro-Am day, is some of the most important, you know, days, because we're tying with sponsors. They're actually paying our purses, and they're the one that keeps things going. So I try to make the guys' Pro-Am days as good as possible. I'll read their putts and try to tell them funny stories and try to make sure that they have a lot of fun because they're spending a lot of money. And I think I'm okay with making fun of myself as well. I'm okay with, just kind of being who I am. For a while, I was kind of different maybe as a pro golfer. I was trying to be a pro golfer. I was trying to be serious. I was trying to do all the things that I thought pro golfers did. And then as soon as I kind of let that all go and I was myself, my golf game came around, and lo and behold, people actually kind of liked me.
Right. Well, I like you. I think everyone listening to this podcast is going to like you. And I'm really excited to see, you know, what it's like to go out there and play with no fans. And
yeah, certainly.
But I'm really excited to see, you know, the rest of your career. And, you know, I wish you the best of luck. And thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Anders. Thanks, we'll hopefully find you at a random golf club nearby soon.
I would love that, dude. I mean, I'll drive to Arizona right now if that's what you're talking about.
We can, I almost joined you for your Tuesday or Wednesday outing at the Phoenix Open. I think you're at Orange Tree Golf Club, which I only live like a mile away from.
Do you really? Dude, that's fun, man. That was a great time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a cool little spot for sure. So, and that's, I think it's awesome what you're doing with that random golf club stuff and getting everyday people involved.
Thanks, man. So. Dude, that's so sweet, man. Yeah, love it. I mean, we've got your bag tag ready to go. We just haven't sent it out yet. We're going to send it out in the next week or two.
Yeah, I will. Wild times right now, but no, I signed up for that email right away. I was in, and if you ever get another one around that I'm available, I'm definitely coming out.
I want to do it. It's that nothing makes me happier than doing that. And if you're listening to the pod and you've been following it, like, those events are just like, it's the same. Like, it's like I wonder if you would play tournament golf if there were no fans and if the money was still the same. You probably would, right?
Yeah, I would. I absolutely.
It just wouldn't be the same.
No, it wouldn't be as much fun. It wouldn't be the same at all. You're right.
It'd be so different. I don't know. I mean, it's so strange. I mean, because I think a lot about how I really wouldn't go play golf alone. Like, I wouldn't, really, I don't want to. I want to go play with people. It's such a wonderful, valuable piece of time.
Absolutely. Totally agree with that for sure. Yeah. I don't play golf alone. I don't practice alone either. I make sure that someone's out there with me, or I got a buddy at least 10 feet away I can yell at. I don't practice alone. I don't play alone. Golf is more fun enjoyed with friends and new friends.
Right. Well, dude, I look forward to that, man. Thanks for bringing that up. That's awesome.
That's it. Yeah, for sure. Happy to do it.
All right. This is awesome.